You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm Molly Wansel.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansel.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansel, and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansel.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Sorry for these extended gaps. It's just I'm a bit busy and keep having to rush about. So that's why there's not one every week at the moment. I do apologise. But there are other things going on in various places.
Well, we'll be back to normal next season.
We'll be back to normal to once a week. But just until we run up, in the run up to Christmas, we're going to be every fortnight, partly because I have commitments elsewhere and it's quite difficult to fit it all in. Plus, I need to prepare. So it's a kind of almost forced upon.
Well, by the time this comes out, you'll actually be like mid-tour.
I'll have started.
You've started.
Yeah. I'm doing a theatre tour with David Suchet called Poirot and More, which begins in October and runs all the way through to Christmas. And then we're doing 3 weeks in the West End at the Pinter Theatre.
Get your tickets now.
Yes. Get your tickets now. They're selling. I'm told they're selling.
Selling like hotcakes.
Well, I don't know about hotcakes, but they're certainly selling.
You said they'd sold out in Cambridge.
Yeah, I think they've almost. Yeah, there are some. The smaller venues have sold out. The bigger ones, well, they've, you know, so many more people.
I mean, Chichester is like a barn.
What?
Chichester Festival Theatre is like a barn.
Well, so is the Lowry.
Ginormous.
The Lowry in Manchester's huge.
Hmm.
It makes it, you know, places like the Watermill in Newbury, tiny.
Yeah. I love the Watermill.
It's very beautiful.
So
beautiful
nice.
Place too.
Yeah.
Good place to start out.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Did you go to the theatre this week?
I did. I went to see Anything Goes, but when this comes out, it will be... Oh no, I think it's on until mid-October.
I think it is too, because my friend Lee Menzies went this week as well. Loved it.
It's so good.
Mm.
You would love it. Like. Yeah. Love it, love it, love it, yeah. Love it.
The American is not as good as another American might have been. She's good, but she's not as good.
Which one's that? I don't know.
I don't know. I can't remember the show well enough.
I don't know which one he's talking. You mean the sort of this one, the young girl who's like, she's not very good.
Yeah,
she's not good. She's fine.
Fine, yeah, fine. But could have been, might have been better. But I gather that it's so nice to be back. Everybody stood up and clapped.
Oh, I mean, they must have had a standing ovation every night, yeah. I mean, the audience was wild.
Yeah. Wild. Were they all wearing masks?
No.
No. Because some of the venues I'm going to, they are asking the audience to wear masks. And other venues, they're not asking them to wear masks.
Yeah, I think it's the theatre preference, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's the venue's choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, some people were, but not everyone.
Well, that's fair enough. It's we just have to live with the conditions and see what happens, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
But you're back in the office.
Yeah, yeah.
At least most of the time.
Yeah, pretty much all the time.
Good-o. Is that all right? Is it working?
Yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's nice to be back.
Must be nice to see people again.
Yeah, it's really nice to be with
everyone. Yeah, to be around, you know, around the company. That's good fun.
Very nice.
But so I haven't been around the company. I'm sort of state of purdah, almost.
You've
not
never
quite.
Worked around a company, though. Not much change for you, really.
Not really, no. It's just potter on. as best I can, and keeping as confident as possible.
Sounds smart.
Yep, yeah, it should be. But I have your support. That's always very important to me.
You do, always.
It was quite a thing to take on a theatre tour at 76.
Yes. I would say yes.
Daunting, I would
call
it.
Not that I would say to you that's going to be a bit much, but I would suggest that you're going to be very tired.
I think it's going to be hard work, yeah.
Jeffrey at the beginning was like, I'll still do the podcast in between. I'll be I was like, no, I don't think so.
As ever, Molly's the voice of reason.
Like, I think if you're traveling from Manchester on a Friday night, arriving back in London on a Saturday, and then traveling to Lord knows Exeter on the Sunday, you weren't going to do anything on Saturday.
Yes.
Other than lie down.
Yes, lie down. As much as possible.
An awful lot of travelling. And the irony is the travelling's probably more tiring than the...
than the performance.
The schlepping the little suitcase and, you know, I'm not sure to get you a new wash bag, Dad.
Well, no, I don't know. I'm all right.
It's good to have these things, you know.
You got me a new suitcase.
I did, yeah. Do we need to get you a smaller suitcase?
No.
Okay.
That's fine. Use that one. Should be okay. Not worried about it.
Anyway.
Well, it's very good to be back. Thank you all for listening. As I often say, we really would be nowhere without you. And it's very important to us. And that's why I'm so looking forward to keeping going with these, even though it is a bit of an extra push. It's well worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And we will almost be at our fourth anniversary.
Yeah.
When this comes out, we might well be at it.
Yeah, we will, close to it. I can't remember the exact day.
Well, we did some trials in August and September, didn't we? And
yeah,
then
I
we
mean,
went
October.
Live in
yeah.
October.
Yeah.
And that was October 2017.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Quite extraordinary.
That is extraordinary, indeed. Anyway, what are we doing this week?
A nice lady called Mika suggested a case which I didn't know. About the abduction and murder of a young boy called Christopher Laverack. And it's actually very interesting. And I thank her for her suggestion. So that's the first...
Thanks, Mika.
That's what I'm going to do.
That was on Instagram. So what are we going to call it?
I think we call it... Murdered by His Uncle.
Murdered by His Uncle.
Christopher Laverack was 9 years old and a schoolboy when he disappeared in March 1984. He was fair-haired and freckle-faced, and you can look him up on your trusty iPhone to find he's a lovely, bright-faced little boy.
I'm just looking it up.
Yes, well, there's no time in that. Anyway, on this particular evening in March 1984, Christopher was going round to his sister, his elder sister's house, to watch television. She's called Kim. Well, he got there about 10 to 7 to watch one of his favourite television programmes. And in the house were Kim and her husband, Stephen, and their 15-month-old son. So Kim decides, or indeed has to, go to her job as a... She works behind the bar in a local pub, okay? Leaving Christopher and the 15-month-old, her 15-month-old son, in the care of her husband, Stephen. Well, you know, when it gets to about 9 o'clock, the baby's asleep... Christopher's in bed, ready to go to sleep, and Stephen decides that he'll go to the pub to visit his wife. No, not there long, only there for about an hour, maybe a bit less. Walks back to his house. They live in Hull, quite a close community, quite small. Everybody lives very near to each other. But when he gets back to the house, no Christopher, disappeared. Into thin air. Searches the house. walks up and down the roads. No sign of Christopher. It's extraordinary. A perfectly ordinary, reasonable street, respectable street in Hull. And a little boy of 9 goes missing just like that, in the twinkle of an eye. Naturally, Stephen and his wife are hysterical. Well, you would be, wouldn't you? You know, a little boy who's in your care has gone. Christopher's mother, Pamela, is contacted. No sign of Christopher back at his mum's. A police search is launched quite quickly. I mean, this is not like one of those cases when, oh, well, it's she probably just decided to do something else or go somewhere else. This is a little 9-year-old boy. So the police start a search in quick order. And sadly, 2 days later, on the 11th of March 1984, Christopher's body is found in a beck, a local stream called Beverley Beck. He's been put in a plastic carpet underlay bag, which was weighed down with a brick. He's also suffered a series of injuries, nasty injuries, savage, one policeman described them as. And he's almost certainly been sexually assaulted, but we are talking about 1984, and that's not the first thing that jumped into a policeman's mind in 1984. His jeans are undone, his trainers, or his early trainers, are in the bag. It's a brutal crime. The police interview all the relatives, anyone might have seen Christopher. One of the relatives is an uncle called Melvin Reed. Now, Melvin is absolutely everybody's favourite uncle. Lovable, trustworthy, likeable, often, seen with Christopher and other boys, showing them around in photographs. Everybody's friend. Everybody's no suspicion, except in one or two of the policemen's minds, that he could have had anything to do with the murder, the abduction, the murder.
They all live nearby.
They all live it. I mean, literally. It's a close-knit community. He lives, I think, 10 minutes walk from Stephen and Kim's house. He's got a bit of a garden with a water feature in it, and it's all perfectly upright and stunningly respectable. And for the best part of 20 years, Christopher's abduction, disappearance and murder go unsolved. It's a wonderful cold case story. But then, out of the blue, not quite out of the blue, but certainly surprisingly, in 2003, the lovable uncle, Melvin Reed, is convicted of 4 sex offences against boys. Out of the blue.
Are they historical?
No. They are over a period, but they're not historical. And the police discover that these offences were committed after Christopher's disappearance. Reed is sentenced to 7.5 years in jail for these sexual offences. And not surprisingly, the police begin to build up a case against Reed for the murder of Christopher Laverack. He has a car which was seen near Stephen and Kim's house on the night in question. He doesn't have an alibi, particularly. He knows the river, the Beck, Beverley Beck, well, because he used to work in a factory overlooking Beverley Beck. So you could say he's got, you know, there's circumstantial evidence against him, but there's nothing convincing. There's no concrete, conclusive proof that Melvin Reed, the lovable uncle, actually killed Christopher Laverack. Although he was arrested in 2006 while in jail in connection with the death. But the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service in England, decided there was insufficient evidence to proceed to a trial. It's a tragedy. But significantly, Reed does not confess when he's interviewed by the police, when he's arrested and discussed the disappearance of Christopher Laverack. He maintains an absolutely straight face. He too is on the same, if you look up, you can see it.
Oh yeah, I've seen him. He comes up.
Yeah.
It looks like he smokes a lot of cigarettes.
I think he did because...
And didn't drink enough water.
No. He was to die of cancer in Hull Prison in February 2008. He was 65 and he got away with the murder for more than 25 years.
So he was never actually convicted?
No. But, and here comes, I think this is what makes this a fascinating case.
Okay.
The Hull police, Humberside police, to their eternal credit, are not prepared to give up on this. And they take what actually is a very amazing step. They consult, I've got to read this out because it's actually quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
They consult a paleontologist who is a specialist in identifying pollen and spores.
Okay.
She's called Dr. Patricia Wiltshire. And she concluded, because they kept, you know, Christopher's clothes, the materials, you know, brick, the plastic carpet underlay bag, they've kept it all. She conducts a long examination and comes to the conclusion there are sufficient pollen and other plant materials to connect Christopher Laverack's clothing and to the garden at Melvin Reed's house.
Ah.
She also points out that the brick found with Christopher's body was also linked to the water feature in Melvin Reed's garden. In other words, the police rapidly came to the conclusion that it was in fact the murder weapon.
Ah.
And so, gradually the portrait begins to emerge of Melvin Reed waiting for Stephen to leave the house. Going into the house, he had a key. They're all friends. He's, you know, everybody knows everybody.
Mm.
Had a key and beckoning Christopher Laverack out of the house, back to his own house.
Yeah, which he would have done. I mean, as usual, those sorts of things are usually committed by someone who knows the child.
So the tragedy here is compounded by the fact, of course, now that Reed is dead. But nevertheless, unput off, Humberside Police ask an independent QC, Paul Watson, to assess the evidence that they now have, including the paleontologist, Dr. Wiltshire, and all the other bits, the lack of alibi, the car, the lot. Plus...
What's the car?
The car, they thought they saw, some people thought they saw Melvin Reed's car outside Stephen's house.
Ah, okay.
On the night. Plus, of course, the fact that Reed is now, or was, a convicted sex offender.
Yeah, I mean, it looks conclusive.
Mm, well, that's exactly the word that Paul Watson used.
Oh.
About the evidence. And the then senior investigating officer for Humberside Police, Detective Superintendent Ray Higginson, said, and I quote, "Reed was an evil man and a man wholly without remorse. Nevertheless, he got away with murder." It's the longest live murder inquiry in the history of Humberside Police. It wasn't finally put to bed until 2012, and it was the murder was committed in March 1984. That's a total of 28 years.
That's amazing.
You know, and even though Reed was dead, they did not give up the fight to prove
that
his guilt.
That he was guilty.
Tragedies. There were so many tragedies in this. Christopher's mum, Pamela, never saw her son again. Just went out to visit his sister.
Watch TV.
Never saw him again. Everybody thought of Reed as being, and I quote, a couple of the neighbours, trustworthy, reliable. One of the question marks that remains in my mind about this case is, was Christopher Reed's first victim, or had there been other victims earlier? Well, had there other offences? It was later suggested by the police that all the subsequent sexual offences were committed after Christopher's disappearance. I think it's a matter of conjecture. We don't really know. Was this the thing that sparked it all off? I mean, Reed at that point was a youngish man. Is this the trigger that set off the subsequent offences? And if that's the case, why did he let the other boys live?
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
You know.
Well, also, I mean, if the... Well, he may have used, like, you know, common tactics like bribery, etc., to keep the other boys quiet for as long as possible.
Mm.
But perhaps with Christopher, that didn't feel like it could work. Or maybe he killed Christopher and then he realised that... I mean, they found the body and the whole investigation went on around him. So if that happens to you once, I don't... Do you think to yourself, oh, I got away with it once? Surely you think...
I think that's one of the things that makes this an interesting
story. I've got off quite well there. Might have taken him a long time to...
Well, let me just introduce two other final things in this story. There was a distinctive bite mark on Christopher's buttocks.
Yuck.
Bites which were also evident in the other sexual offences against the other boys. But significantly, and here I think it is significant, Humberside Police do not believe that Reed committed this crime alone. They can't prove that he did it alone, but they don't believe he did it alone.
Why not?
They believe he had an accomplice to help him. I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I'm just saying the detectives, many of the detectives who worked on the case over many years, believe there must have been more than one of them. Not always the case, I grant you. And I'm not saying it's gospel, but...
That's probably that, just like that kind of thing of like, oh, I've killed Christopher and you're going to have to help me sort it out kind of thing.
Maybe.
Like, let's both attack Christopher.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't seem like that to me.
It doesn't seem like that to me either. It feels like a man who's working alone. But there was a considerable feeling among Humberside Police that he had an accomplice. But there's no evidence of accomplice in the sexual offences for which he was charged and convicted in 2003.
I'm sure you wouldn't have accomplice for sexual assault, just for the murdering, disposing of body type element.
Well, I leave you that thought with you. One of the things that I think is, if you like, there's a moral to this story. And that's one that we've talked about many times before. It's always people that you know. Always somebody. Random killings are very, very rare. It's almost always someone you know.
Mm. Well, especially with children and that kind of thing. I mean, I know random killings are rare. But yeah.
But this is, I think, I know I hesitated before I decided to do this case, because we did have a run of children, didn't we? And we decided we wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, well, that was quite a long time ago.
That's what I thought. It was quite a long time ago. And this is a fascinating case.
Yeah.
It's apparently straightforward, but actually not.
Yeah.
So that is the murderous uncle.
Yeah, the murderous uncle.
The murder of Christopher Laverack, who was abducted, assaulted, killed, and thrown into a stream.
Killed by his uncle.
Hmm.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Mika.
Yes, Mika. It's a very interesting suggestion.
We do try and get to your suggestions. We can't do all of them, but I do write them down.
Oh, yes.
And send them to Jeffrey.
Yeah.
So
I had very sent me a very good list this week.
Yeah.
And my our perennial fan Phil has sent me a whole complete dossier.
No show without Phil.
No show without Phil.
Hey, Phil.
He's we're going to do one of those later in this series.
Okay, great. Hope you're feeling okay today, Phil.
Yeah, but I think that point about hiding in place.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Insight, and people are less trustworthy than you think, and all of that. You know, the kind of Jimmy Savile vibe, you know?
Yeah, bit grim.
Yes,
Does that just mean that everyone... We can't live life thinking everyone is awful, though. It's just not...
No, you can't.
It's no way to live.
You can't, but I think it would be fair to say that you can live your life being cautious.
Yes, agreed. Yes, it's good. It's good to be sensible and take care of oneself as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Thanks, Dad.
Pleasure. Pleasure's the wrong word, isn't it?
Yes.
to be honest, when Christopher was killed, his uncle, quotes, was in his very early 40s, which leads me to suggest or think that possibly there had been other crimes.
Yeah. Well, we'll never know.
That's for true.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. And certainly, Melvin Reed isn't going to tell us.
No, unless he comes back to visit you from beyond the grave.
Yep, well.
I've been listening to a history podcast, and which I like very much. And they were just talking, this one I just listened to was about vampires.
Ah.
They were talking a lot about coming back from the dead. So, if Melvin comes back as a vampire, he might tell you then.
Yes. love at first bite. Mm. Yes. Mm.
Have you read Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Mm. Do you know Bram Stoker was Henry Irving's manager?
I did not know that.
In fact, he ran the Lyceum Theatre when Irving owned it.
I did not know that either.
If you look outside Joe Allen's, which thankfully is reopening soon, There are three names on the wall of the Lyceum Theatre.
Yeah.
Ellen Terry, Irving and Stoker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Sorry, it's a piece of useless information.
That's not useless. That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
That's good info.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Hmm. Henry Irving was the greatest British actor of the 19th century.
So was just a sort of sideline?
Yeah, Bram Stoker did it as a sideline.
Everyone felt they could write a vampire story according to the podcast I just listened to.
Mm. It's good. It's a good one, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you read... I don't know why I'm asking you these questions, because I know that the answer will always be yes. I I was going to say, have you read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein?
Yeah, I have.
I was thinking about it because they were talking about the adaptation, an adaptation of Dracula. And then I was thinking in my head about Young Frankenstein, but mixing it up with Count, with Dracula because of going to the creepy castle and stuff is actually like not dissimilar to the beginning of
Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, but that's Dracula, isn't it, rather than Frankenstein?
Yes.
To pulling the two.
Well, I think in a lot of people's minds they were conjoined. And they were highlights of the 19th century literature, weren't they?
The most famous Gothic novels, weren't they?
Yes. I've not. You have an appetite for Gothic novels. I don't really.
It's funny because the actual stories, what the versions that people have in their head of Frankenstein and of Dracula, aren't really that much like the actual books.
No, they're not. The myth is slightly different from the book itself. Yes, yeah, that's entirely fair.
Big time.
Yeah, but the myths are very powerful. Aren't they? I mean, incredibly
so. There's like a whole section in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which I don't think anyone would. There's a lot of bits being on a boat in big icy window wonderland, which you don't get in the normal story.
No.
I am a big fan, Dad. Big fan.
Yes. Well, I think that's great.
I also listened to a podcast this morning about Genghis Khan, which I found very interesting.
Crikey.
Mm.
My word.
I've been awake for a long time, so.
Well, no wonder you're tired, darling.
On that cheery note.
Are you doing anything exciting this coming week or weeks?
A few things.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, you know, keep them busy. I mean, by the time this podcast comes out, I will have been on holiday. So.
Whoa, that's great. That's super good.
Pretty cool.
Very good. I should be in Perda and then
halfway
touring,
around the UK
touring theatres.
Well, thank you to all the people that help us, our producer Sam Brain, my brother Dan who did the music, my friend George who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and you the listeners, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much, and to you Molly, whose idea this was and who keeps it going with a phenomenal determination, which I'm very admiring of, and suggested it to me, and it's been an absolute delight, a joy to do. But in every way, it's a joy to do, and it's a joy to be with you, the listeners, as well. So thank you for listening, and as I always say, do be careful out there.